Hi, I'm Fred Chow, and you're listening to the Monarchist Podcast.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Mike.
And you're listening to the Monarchist Podcast. Today, we're lucky to be joined by head coach of ODU Sailing and Intercollegiate Sailing Association Hall of Famer, Mitch Brindley. Coach, welcome to the best and only ODU Podcast.
Awesome, guys. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm proud to be on the Monarchist Podcast. This is awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Mitch. So you grew up in Sugar Land, Texas. Can you talk to us about how you first got started sailing? And what led you to come to Old Dominion?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in Texas, people always thought, I came here as a freshman to Old Dominion from Texas, and people really did not understand how on earth I could sail in Texas. But I did grow up on the Gulf Coast and grew up sailing. I was fortunate to grow up sailing small boats as a kid and was not part of a high school sailing team at the time. But it was a successful junior sailor and had sailed around the country and knew I wanted to sail in college. And I had at the time, and this is, you know, this was in the late 1900s. And I was a freshman in 85, I think it was. Yeah. But I had heard about the only way I had heard about Old Dominion at the time outside of their sailing program was women's basketball. And everyone else in my family went to University of Texas, and so it was a big step to do something different. My father was on the golf team at UT. My mother was head cheerleader at UT. My older brother was at UT at the time. My younger brother went there. So everything about my growing up was being a Longhorn. And so, you know, I wanted to do something a little bit different. Growing up sailing, wanted to sail. In college, it was not a better place to go than Old Dominion. And so that's how I found myself here and have pretty much been here since. So,
true, Mitch. You leaving Texas and coming to Old Dominion was like Peyton Manning going to Tennessee and not going to, what, Ole Miss or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a big step. And you've got me cracking up with the late 1900s because my son is always asking me if that was way back in the 19s.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
All right, so you're in your 29th season at the helm for the Monarchs here, having led the Monarchs to an amazing 10 national championships, 7 as a head coach, 1 as an assistant coach, and you won 2 while you were a student at Old Dominion, if I have my numbers right, hopefully. How has collegiate sailing changed over the years?
Wow, it is really, you know, it has changed dramatically. I mean, all college athletics have changed over the last 29, 30 years, but sailing has changed in particular. It's become much more competitive. It's grown more varsity programs competing at higher levels. There's more infrastructure involved. More cost, more support. And it's more competitive. We're sailing kind of the same slow, stupid boats that we were sailing when I was on the team, very similar style boat, but the style of racing has become more competitive. You know, just the athleticism of the participants and the athletes, the coaching has, you know, except for myself, has gotten better across the board. And we're seeing growth there. Tons. High school has grown dramatically around the country, feeding college sailing. The thing about college sailing, it's a very low barrier to entry, and so it's a pretty efficient way to get people in the water. It's a pretty efficient part of sailing, cost efficient, and so that's one of the reasons we've had some success and growth. Where in other parts of the sport we haven't had growth, but in sailing it's become very competitive, and certainly over the last 10 years in particular, it's become very competitive, and that's really the biggest difference we're seeing. And growth, the number of teams over the last 15 years is pretty much the same, but before we were dealing with, it was the top 15 teams that were really good, and now it's the top 18, top 20 teams are really good. Now it's really a top 40 that are very competitive and so on. And that's the biggest thing that we're seeing. I was the president of college sailing for 27 years until last year I got to retire, which was nice from that part of it. And it was great to see some of this growth and development and just kind of organizational and it's become a lot much more sophisticated, well-managed sport. And recruiting now is so much harder than it ever was. It's our biggest difference. It's our challenge as a team, a state school, state university. That's our challenge is the recruitment side now. So
you talk about it and you mentioned it. You led us right into our next question. And we've talked to a lot of coaches at Old Dominion, and each sport seems so different in how the recruitment process works. Well, you got rowing, where they're recruiting just pure athletes and teaching them how to do the sport.
Yep.
You got football and tennis and golf, where these people are competing and at the upper echelon of their sport in high school.
Right.
Talk to us about sailing, because you are limited to the coast, really.
Yeah. I mean, we do have kids from the Midwest and we do have kids from other places, but like rowing, there are opportunities for great athletes. I've always said you can take an athlete and teach them to be a sailor, but you can't take a sailor and teach them to be an athlete. And so if we have a great athlete that was played field hockey or soccer, and we can teach them to become a great sailor. And that's typically for a certain position in the boat, the front of the boat, we call crew in the boat, as opposed to driving or helm or skippering. It's someone that can come in newer in the sport. We can teach them that role. And we have several walk-ons, so to speak, that have learned the sport in college sailing, and that's their access point. And a lot of times it's generally female, small size. The boats we're sailing are pretty small, and we have in college sailing the ability to switch who's in the boat based on the wind conditions. So if it's light air, we'll have a lighter skipper crew combination. As it gets windier, you might put in someone that's heavier or taller. And to give yourself more weight in the boat when it gets windy to keep the boat flat and in control. And so for some of the lighter air condition, we can start with someone that is, as long as they're a good athlete, we can teach them, and they're willing to freeze their butt off in February for a sport they didn't know anything about 2 years ago. And we have a couple of sailors like that now that are great contributors and are learning. So from a recruitment standpoint, for the drivers, the helm in the boat, the skipper, it's very competitive. All of our top sailors are coming in with extensive experience, having sailed often at a youth national or international level. And those are some of the things that we're looking for, and we're recruiting all over. We're fortunate that we have some great local kids that choose to come to Old Dominion. And that's certainly been a focus over the last really probably 8 years of working closely to develop athletes and participate in the development of the high school and youth sailors, because Old Dominion can be expensive as an out-of-state student. And so it's attractive from an in-state standpoint. And the more, the better the kids that are competing at some of the local high schools here are, then the better. It's more local talent that we get to have on our team. For years, so many local sailors would go to College of Charleston or go somewhere else, and we've now created a situation where we're really working to get a lot more of them locally to stay here. And we're fortunate we have quite a few of our team members are local. And then we have someone from Portugal. We have two from St. Croix on the team. We have Chicago. We've got New England. You bet. We've got it. Rhode Island, all over. So Texas. So like every coach, always have to be recruiting. So
I want to do a quick follow-up to that. every coach kind of has a certain body type they're looking for. You talked about these athletes, whether they're experienced or not. You said smaller for the front of the boat or smaller for the women on some of these smaller boats. But can you talk to us about, like, if you had to build a perfect sailor, what would they look like?
So if I'm looking for someone for the front of the boat, then we're looking for someone that's probably a female. And generally, we're looking at a female here because the women have, with in college sailing, it's a co-ed sport. And so women have women's events and open or co-ed events. And they get to sail twice, but they have, you know, twice the number of opportunities, they can fill multiple roles. And so it's generally, and also from our standpoint, from a roster limits and Title IX perspective, we carry more women on our roster than men. But it's, you know, typically looking for someone for the front of the boat, for crew, and in one of our boats, an FJ or 420, you know, oftentimes we have someone that's 115 to 125 or something like that. And then someone driving, there might be 145 to 155 or bigger. And then the guys are typically bigger just in general. But then, you know, for some of the sailing that we do is in a one-person boat, single-handed boat, some Olympic equipment that we race in college sailing called an Ilka or Laser. And they the guys for that to be optimal is like 175, 180 and tall, you know, taller the better type thing. There's a little bit that you can get too big for the double handed boats if you get too big. So it just depends on what we're looking for. We're trying to bring in more women every year, and that's certainly a focus. Someone that's athletic and fit it serves us well. And that's where we've had quite a few that were played soccer, field hockey in high school, or maybe did cheerleading and so forth as well. It was a good size. And you see that a lot.
All right, Coach. So yeah, you've had the privilege to coach something like 70 All-Americans, a couple female sailors of the year, and I think a sportsman of the year for ICSA. That's got to feel pretty awesome. Can you talk to Monarch Nation a little bit about how you and your staff work to develop those student athletes? What's making them so successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, a big part, you know, there have been years where we've had someone that has come to us and they were sailing at the youth international level and competing in the top 10 at youth worlds or something in a class. But so a lot of our sailors, even if I take someone like Anna Tunnicliffe, gold medalist, she came in with a good broad base of competitive experience sailing multiple different classes, but probably wasn't, you know, not competing entirely at the deeply in the at the international level. But she was driven, incredibly smart, and a great athlete, and we worked to provide her an opportunity to get as much experience quickly in the boats and the collegiate boats that we're racing. You really focus on the learning, the development, and the mindset that what are we going to learn today? And that's the big thing that we're pushing is what are we going out on the water to learn? What are we coming off the water as a knowledge point that we've gained? And that's what we're trying to do across the board, whether it's someone that's come in with a great deal of experience or someone that's primarily sailed on the Chesapeake Bay. We're really looking at developing talent, and we're going to do that through starting in the most competitive event that person can compete in and not get their butts completely kicked. We want someone that's going to be, we're trying to match people with the event where they're going to be challenged. We don't want them to totally get completely beat up. We want to field a team that's going to be challenged by an event, especially early in the season, learn from it, then move up and get, you know, to more and more competitive range of events. And we also we're not going to go to an event just to kick everyone's butt either. We're not going to learn very much from that. And so that's where when we might sail a freshman at an event, we're going to try the right event where they get the most competition. So when you look at our schedule and we have three events a weekend, we might have an event where we're just really using it to develop some race experience for someone. And that's why we carry that schedule where we're going all over the place. And instead of, so on a weekend, I might be taking a team, taking a team one place, and assistant coach Tyler's taking a team to another place, and assistant coach Morgan, she's taking a team to a third place. We might have three events a weekend. We've certainly scaled that back a little bit, just from it's expensive, travel so expensive these days. Just being mindful of that. Our team, we've brought our roster size down a little bit just to manage. The bigger the roster, to keep everyone happy, you have to do a lot of competition. And so we've brought our roster size down a little bit and might not be doing three events every weekend like we used to. Some weekends we're doing two, but that's how we're kind of developing that experience is creating really competitive, great competition outside of home. Certainly we have strong competitive practices, a really skill-based practice scenario that we're working on, and then taking what we're learning from practice and taking to regatta in more of a strategy format, longer format, and where practice is working on more skill-based.
All right. Before I turn the question over to Mike, a couple of moments ago you mentioned Title IX and having more women on the team than guys. I know as Mike and I started this podcast a couple years ago, I've learned a tremendous amount about scholarships in different sports, of football with 85 scholarships and then baseball at 11.7. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that affects your sport, kind of what scholarships look like?
So that is an excellent question. And one of the crazy things about college sailing, on top of it being co-ed, that sometimes people have a hard time getting their head around, we have a rule by the Intercollegiate Sailing Association that we've had since the 70s that prohibits financial aid based on sailing ability. So it's essentially a Ivy League rule that we all have to follow. And part of it is because early on in the development of college sailing, it was Harvard, Yale, and Princeton all competing. And so that's kind of how a lot of our rules have followed that Ivy League or D3 format when it comes to scholarships. So all of our athletes are on their own dime here. We can't give any athletic scholarships. We have quite a few there on academic scholarships. And so that's a recruiting challenge for us. There is more pressure now than ever to change that rule. And certainly in the landscape of college athletics and landscape of college financial aid and expensive college, there are schools, and we would be one of them, that would like to see scholarships, particularly women's scholarships. And from a Title IX perspective, by having participation opportunities for women, we are helping one of the three prongs in Title IX, and that's the providing opportunities for participation by female student athletes, or female students, and then we also count the expenses and so forth that we're spending on our female athletes and so forth in terms of meeting that proportionality. But what we aren't able to do, because we don't offer scholarships, is we can't balance out the 85 football scholarships. But from a Title IX standpoint, we are supporting the participation opportunities. And that's where they want to see that we have more women than men. And from our sports co-ed, and because we have so many events, the women, we have a greater need for women on the roster too, because there are more events that we're doing. And so there may be a change in the future for college sailing to allow scholarships. Before, all the Ivy Leagues were so against it, but now they're not as against it as they used to be, because their need-based aid is so high. And they really don't have to worry about losing a recruit to a College of Charleston or Old Dominion. They're going to lose recruits to another Ivy or to Stanford or the Naval Academy, but they're not losing recruits to even if we were offering full scholarships, because this, the demand, the social demand for an Ivy League education is so high right now in the U.S. And we can't do anything about that. Been there, great sailors at those schools, great programs, well-funded. And it's just something that's changed dramatically in the last 8 years. The Ivies have really stepped up and been, they just have so much admissions pull now than what they had 10 years ago in college sailing. So we're seeing more not necessarily a dominance by the Ivies, but a very strong presence, overarching presence in the competitive success of the teams. And so teams like us and College of Charleston, for example, it's also a state, you know, state school, and other public D1 schools, it's a challenge. And then we have other schools like Tulane, which is a relatively new varsity program. You know, they don't offer scholarships either, but the admissions pull into Tulane is helpful. And because it's a private school, they do have a fair amount of need-based aid compared to a public institution like Old Dominion. So I know that's kind of a long answer, but we don't offer scholarships. So when it comes to recruiting, it's a hustle. It's a sales. Right? I'm convincing kids to come, you know, sometimes across the country, across the globe, to sail for us and pay for it themselves. I'm fortunate some of them are good students, and they're going to get some academic aid, some merit aid in that sense, and they want to be here. And that's the awesome thing, is they want to, you know, the two kids that were from St. Croix, a freshman and a senior from St. Croix, they're freezing their butts out there today in February and on the Chesapeake Bay, and they chose to come here and do that and sail for us. And likewise, the ones from Kikatan, you know, Pocosin, and local sailors too, but they're footing the bill right now. So,
all right. So it's clear, I mean, you have a lot of challenges here. So you talked about having to go head-to-head with all these elite schools in the country.
Yeah.
If you look at the top 25 for women or open, it's clear that the elite academic institutions are really good.
They're really good right now. They really are.
Yeah, because you got all the Ivies, but then you also have like MIT,
yeah,
Tufts, and schools like that involved, which it's got to be very challenging.
Yeah, it was a big – It's been a big swing the last couple of years. And I had a conversation with the Yale coach at our national championships last year. And he said, Mitch, I remember the time when you had all the women. And we did. And we had multiple All-Americans and Olympians. That we had a whole squad. We won a women's national championship. And of three of the sailors that were on that squad, three of the four that were racing became Olympians. And we can get, certainly get back to that, but it's when they're offered admissions to Yale, it's a tough one. They're not going to turn that down. Their mom's not going to let them. So we got to keep outworking them though. So
obviously that's one challenge, but how is it being a part of a Division I school, but not being an NCAA sport? How does that impact you?
They're good and bad. We follow, at Old Dominion, we're essentially following the same set of rules. And the college sailing rules mirror the NCAA rules. And so the whole idea is that college sailing could fit in the same box without a lot of the same hassle that you have from the compliance side on the NCAA. I mean, there's some stuff that's really backwards right now with the NCAA, because they're stuff they don't care about anymore that they would really have liked to care about, but now they can't. And that is making a big difference. And then little stuff that they are trying to care about that might not be that big of a deal. And so in college sailing, we're really trying to fit in the same box. Our season, we have the same playing and practice limitations and stuff like that. We just look at it a little bit differently. We're really a full two season sport. We have a fall. Really, it's all year. We sail from September, the first weekend of September, through really about the first weekend in November, and then start up again when the water's good and cold in February, and go through the first part of May. And the championships can be later in May, first part of June. But we're practicing the same hour limitations and all that. We fit into the NCAA box. And we're at ODU, we're counting all that. A lot of the teams are doing the same reporting at their school that we'd be doing here in terms of your countable athletically related activity and so forth. So there's not a whole lot different. And the thing to remember from a Title IX standpoint, the Title IX doesn't give a damn about the NCAA. There's no correlation there, and they really don't. Title IX is all Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights issue, not a NCAA issue. The other thing about college sailing is we are competing across divisions, which is similar to other sports do that as well. There are other sports that are national championship sports instead of NCAA, instead of Division I championships and so forth. And of course, I always do like to point out, especially, it's changed a little bit now, but for years, anyone in the bowl subdivision really wasn't competing for a national championship. They're not competing for an NCAA championship. They're competing for a bowl championship. And so that's a little bit different. And I always thought the same way in sailing. Well, we're not competing for an NCAA championship. We're competing for an intercollegiate sailing championship. But we're all trying to be our best with among our peers and who we're competing against, whatever school that is. So.
All right. So there's a blue door behind you.
Yes.
And it's got some cool magnets on it, boats. And we talked a little bit before we started recording, and I'm in awe on, I don't know anything about sailing. So I think of people getting in boats and figuring out what the wind's doing and trying to go fast and beat another boat. But
yeah,
this is reminding me of, say, Jeff Jones or Kieran drawing up a play. And talk to us a little bit about strategy in, I guess there's multiple types of sailing. You're talking about team sailing in the spring, and maybe there's individual. Yeah. Talk to Monarch Nation about that a little bit.
Yeah. So in sailing, there are several components that lead to success. There is your boat speed, how fast you can make your boat go. With most of what we're doing, we have two people in a boat, and they're working to trim the sails, balance the boat, adjust the sails, and just for boat speed, to make it go as fast as possible. Then you're working on how you maneuver the boat, how you turn the boat when you tack or jibe, which is our primary maneuvers in sailing, how you can do that without losing any speed or by gaining speed through those tacks. And so it's, how you that might be like a ball handling drill or something like that. How well you can, how efficient you are in passing the ball or dribbling and not just your pure speed, or how quickly on football, how well you can run a route and hit your receiver and so forth. And so that's kind of our boat handling drills and how well we can tack without losing speed. And that's, we don't want to capsize an attack or anything. And you do capsize sometimes, turn upside down in college sailing in small boats, but you don't like to do it. It's not very fast when you're upside down.
This episode of the Monarchist Podcast is brought to you by the Pride of ODU Collective. Their mission is to elevate the experience of student athletes through name, image, and likeness, while also elevating the fan experience. If you or your business are interested in getting involved, you can reach out to us directly or go over to theprideofodu.com. That is theprideofodu.com. Thank you for listening, and go Monarchs.
Then you have race course strategy, and that's how you would sail the race, even if there's no one else out there. How you would sail around this course as fast as possible. What would be the quickest route? And there might be one side of the course that has more wind, and so the boat's going to go faster. There might be one side of the course that has that's flatter, smoother water and less choppy. On the other side, there could be a lot of motorboat chop because you're out by the channel in Annapolis and there's motorboat chop everywhere, and that's slow when you're hitting those waves. Or there might be favorable current on one side of the course or the other. And then there could be a wind shift that shifts from one direction. And those kind of strategy things that make one side of the race course faster or slower than the other. And so we have to look at strategy. We have to look at our local, what's this cloud pattern going to do to our condition, and how's is the wind going to veer? Is it going to, you know, veer to the right, or we're going to have a wind bend off the shoreline? You're talking about Lambert's Point. There's always what I call, when we have a south wind here, there's a constant shift. I call it the Norfolk Southern, and it's the left shift off of Lambert's Point right there by the coal piers. And it's, when we're racing here, you can kind of count on 70% of the time there's going to be a favored left shift, and that favors one side of the race course. And don't tell anyone else that. No, just kidding. Most of the college teams that come here, they've learned that. But anyway, there are those things that affect strategy and how you race. And then the fourth thing, and really the top of the pyramid when you put all these together, is your tactics. And that's how you're going to race. How are you going to compete against the other boats? How are you going to make the boat get around the race course as it's relevant to the boats around you, and how you employ, you know, your skills and the racing rules and so forth to control the opponents around you and position yourself relative to the opponents around you and maybe the wind shift and so forth. And what you see behind me here is a lot of times we use just magnetic boats on a whiteboard, or I have some in my office here, where we can go over a scenario. It might be a rule scenario with a team member, or some of our plays in the team racing. It's 3-on-3 team racing, where we'll have 3 Old Dominion boats racing against 3 Georgetown boats, for example. And it's a short, about 12-minute race around a course that looks like a digital inn. You start, you sail up into the wind around a mark, then go cross wind around another mark, then come down, bed downwind, cross another to another mark, then back up wind to a finish. And so you're making this digital end shape. And so much in sailing when we're racing, other than the marks that are fixed, the buoys that you're going to, that define the course, there's so many changes that are taking place. And imagine if you were on the soccer field and the goals keep changing sizes and moving, the sidelines change, and or basketball, the court is dynamic and is moving around. And that can happen to us as the wave state changes, or the wind strength changes. And we can't stop the action. We can't call a timeout. We can't freeze, because the boats are always moving. It's hard to freeze and reset. And so there are certain points in a race where the boats have to get in order. As you're rounding a buoy, you might have boats that look like that going upwind. And then as they approach a mark, when they change course, they'll all end up in a line and now are in an order. And once they're in that order, we have a set play that we'll do from that particular order that they might be in. If we're in our 3 boats are in 2, 3, 4, second, third, and fourth, and the opponent will have the one first place, they might be winning, but they're in fifth and sixth, and it's 1 point for first, 2 for second, so forth. And how the math works is 10 or less, you're winning. And so we have set plays that we'll do. We'll have a play 2 where we're trying to be in a 2, 3, 4, that's winning. And so we have set moves that we'll do at each mark. And so we'll go through these plays, and I encourage the team to come in, talk about why we do certain things. We have certain like rules of thumb that we know if we're rounding a mark and it's 2 teammates together, what one teammate's always going to do, and then we have an understanding of what the opponent's going to do. And there's most all the teams are kind of operating out of the same playbook. They kind of all have the same plays, and even some of the same names of the plays. Everyone's got a few different code words or different things you use when you're communicating. But some of the principles are all the same. It's all a matter of executing as smoothly as possible. And understanding, communicating well with your teammate across the race course, so they know whether you're trying to go fast or you have to play back on the opponent behind you and pass the teammate through. The one thing about sailing, even though our courses are relatively short, I mean, it doesn't take too long to sail a 12-minute race, and we'll do a bunch of these throughout the day. most sports, you know, how far in football, you can't get that far away from anyone else at any given time. In sailing, you can, in a matter of moments, you can be a quarter mile apart. And so, you know, it's managing that separation and that leverage that an opponent might get on you is one of the things that we work through.
Super quick follow-up on this. One, are you and your staff in radio communication with them to be able to call these things or whatever? And Right. Are the individual boats, how do they communicate with each other?
So that's a really good question. In practice, sometimes we'll use headsets for them to talk, to work with them during practice. But during racing, we can't communicate with them. We talk to them between races, and we can give them, you know, a little soundbite and things like that to talk about between races before they go right into the next one. But we can't yell out to them. We can't. First of all, the problem is if you do that, you have to be right, and might not always be right if I was trying. But we do in practice. Sometimes we'll use some headsets that we use and talk to them. And you know, one, really like to listen to them and how they're talking. And then on a lighter day, it's pretty easy to communicate across the race course. When it gets windy, it's very hard to communicate. And we have, when you're trying to communicate with someone and you're trying to tell your teammate to go, you say, go, 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 that can sound like no, 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 pretty easily. And so we always use rabbit and dog. If you want your teammate to slow the opponent, you say dog. If you want them to go fast, you say rabbit, because it doesn't sound the same. And we have little things like that that we do, and it can be tough. And sometimes they feel like they're yelling at each other, and you're just trying to communicate across the race course. They'd be loud, flapping sails. And even just from the coach to the athlete in the water, it can be really hard. I use a megaphone frequently, but I can't hear them very well. I had an athlete, you know, kind of upset yesterday. It's like, and it's like, I can't hear you. I've got, they're luffing sails. It was blowing like 15 to 18 yesterday. And I've got an outboard right in my left ear. I can't hear anything. Not to mention I'm, you know, 56 and I have lost some of that from years of an outboard and a loud whistle. But the communication can be a challenge. But we do emphasize the need to practice clear, concise communication. It's so important. And they can talk across the race course to each other in team racing, but having that clear, concise communication is really important.
Yeah, you were talking about communicating with them, and I started envisioning those big play cards they have in football, where they now they're starting to put like cartoons or movies on them. I'm just envisioning you guys holding those up, trying to communicate across a very windy, loud area.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You know, maybe we should get more creative than what we're doing right now, because the yelling is sometimes the verbal communication is difficult when it gets windy. Maybe we need to do something else to think about that.
I'd be like, what the heck is the Homer Simpson card supposed to mean?
Yeah,
so.
I end up half the time watching a football game trying to figure out what the hell they're doing on the sideline there. Yeah, we have some fun plays that we know that they say that create some communication with them, but we need to work on that. I like that. I need to work on some, I don't know if they're not gonna be able to lift up a sign in the middle, but maybe there's some other things that we can do to get there. So.
All right. So I've been lucky. My dad was in the Coast Guard, so we moved around a lot and is always on the coast, but we spent some time in Hawaii where one of the big sports is canoe sailing.
Yep.
And then we spent some time in Rhode Island where the America's Cup is a big deal.
Yeah.
Because you got the yacht sailing, right?
Yeah.
Talk to us about how fans can get more involved with ODU sailing and supporting the program.
The nice thing about college sailing is, unlike some of the other sailing where they go racing off over the horizon and the boats get really small as they get far away, most of what we're doing in college sailing is pretty close to shore. Even the America's Cup stuff is now following more of a college format where it's really close, like stadium sailing. And most of our racing here at ODU is going to be right off the dock here, as close as the tide will let us get. There were, when I first started in coaching, we always would go really far out and get the best wind and the best conditions we could for the racing. We've learned, like, well, no, let's just, so many other places we go to don't have it this nice, this open water that we have here. And it was, if we go to Georgetown and they sail under Reagan National Airport, and it's a really not a great place to sail. We might as well do all of our racing in a crappy place too. So we'll get close to shore. It's actually never crappy here, but we'll get close to shore. And so you can watch, you can come down at any of our home events. And even if you don't really know what's going on, you can see the sailing going on. And there's a lot of other cool stuff to look at. Yesterday we had a bald eagle over the top of us in practice. We have dolphins year round just about now. There's a lot of other stuff to see, otters. But from the sailing standpoint, any of us, you know, anytime someone's down, if someone asks a question, if I'm not in the middle of coaching my team at the moment, we'll happily try to explain what's going on. And that's the best thing to do, is come out and check out one of our events and look at what's going on. We do have a couple of good events. One of the challenges is a couple of our events are in, and we have one event coming up in the first weekend in March. We have a women's team race event. And March on the water can be pretty chilly. And we have one event later in March, our Zambeki team race. It's a great event. It's always very competitive. Some of the top teams in the country will be here for that one. And then we have a conference team race championship in early April as well. And so we have three events. They're always on weekends. That's nice. Back when the golf course was there, it was great. You could play golf and check out some sailing at the same time. So knock out two slow sports at once. It's always good. But I just encourage you all to come down and check it out. Anyone wants to come out and watch practice? Our practices are open. Yeah, come on out. Come on out, Aaron. Our practices are open. We don't have a fence. Sometimes we're ways out there, depending on what we're doing. Good pair of binoculars is the suggestion.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested, but you can't hold it against me. I did 11 years in the Navy, but I'm an aircraft carrier kind of guy. So, and I didn't go to the Naval Academy. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's okay.
I'll be out there to learn, to watch, get educated.
That's all so right. Have you pitched Wood on adding some stadium seating on the berm on Lambert's Point, like where the
that's
golf
a, that's is? A good idea. That's good. And there was a time before that was a golf course, so we always went up there to video from when we were videoing. But now with drones, we don't need to go up the top of the hill. But it is great view. It is great viewing from up there. It really is. That's a good point. Yeah, we could put some seats over there. So, yeah, we have to think about that.
All right. So we have one more question, then we'll get to the fun stuff. Obviously, this area is great for sailing. Do you have any tips for people that either want to get involved or get started in sailing as adults, or want their kids to get started in the area in sailing?
Well, I am biased because I've been doing this for a long time. I do think sailing is one of the greatest sports, whether you're getting into it later in life or starting out as a 6 to 8 year old. The self-reliance, the self-awareness that's needed. You put a kid, an 8-year-old and a little Optimus dinghy by themselves, they're gonna learn quick. There's some great, from a youth sailing standpoint, there are great programs around that are access. They have open access. There's Norfolk Yacht Club, Hampton Yacht Club, both have excellent junior sailing programs, junior learn to sail programs, junior racing programs. Kids that come out of those programs that go on to compete at really high levels. And then Youth Sailing Virginia, over, they operate out of Fort Monroe. It's a great program. There are two high schools, the Hampton Sea High Schools and Hampton Roads Academy, both practice out of there. They have great summer programs as well for the community at Youth Sailing Virginia. It's a really nice place to sail because it's right on the Mill Creek side. You have inland side there of Fort Monroe, and it's a neat place to sail. And then Sail Nauticus also has a great program, the Sail Nauticus Academy. And they're sailing a little bit bigger boats and sailing like 20-foot boats. And Sail Nauticus also has adult sailing programs as well, learn to sail programs, as does Youth Sailing Virginia. And then Big Blue Sailing Academy, which is something we run out of here. We've had some camps and classes, and we have a focus a little more on some like youth, competitive youth, like travel team level stuff. But we may offer some learn to sail as well for both adult and youth if we can get an instructor lined up for the summer. But then the other thing is, like, especially for the adults, there are always people that own boats that need people to sail with them and race with them, especially when you get into racing. People buy boats. I know over at Willoughby Harbor Marine, at Willoughby, they race on Thursday evenings. And these are very casual races. They do something, I think, on Wednesday out of Little Creek and then out of Hampton Yacht Club on Wednesdays as well. And generally, someone could show up and walk down the dock at 5 o'clock and hop, you know, find someone to go sailing with, someone that needs another body. And, you know, they'll tell you what to do on a boat. And it's a great way to get out on the water. So,
and I'm glad you mentioned Sail Nauticus, because I have a friend who did the adult course there. Her friend had a boat and they were going to do a trip to the Caribbean. And once she passed the course, that's what they did. So
yeah.
Really cool. Yeah. I'm kind of jealous, and I kind of want to try to get into it now, because
yeah,
you told me about that trip. It just sounded like an amazing way to spend some time.
Yeah, it's the great thing is sailing takes you places, and you can take a learn to sail class, work up through your small boat sailing into bare boat chartering. You can go charter a boat in the Caribbean or the Keys or the Med, whatever. That sounds great, especially this time of year. We should all be sailing the Caribbean right now. So.
Yeah, that does sound nice. You know what else sounds nice? Some fun questions.
All right.
You guys ready? There's no right or wrong answers on this, but this first one right here, I think we're going to call it the Ricky Ronnie question, because every time that we ask this question to Ricky, he's extremely passionate about this. Is there a particularly weird rule in sailing that the average fan wouldn't have a clue about? And also, if you could change one rule in sailing, what would it be?
Okay, we got a lot of arcane rules. Well, it's just the sport. We're dealing with a sport that's been around for a really long time. And so some of that is arcane and silly. But I think there was a discussion at our winter coaches conference, an annual meeting for the Intercollegiate Sailing Association. And it was about banning Garmin watches or something like this, that you can track heart rate monitor, but you can track your position and everything else. And it's like, oh, we need to, if everyone is allowed to have that, is there advantage? Or when I think it's another data point that we should be able to use. And so sometimes I get frustrated with college sailing that we're a little too, conservative and that stuff. And I think if there's one rule to change, I would say, I think that we should up our use of technology during races for the athletes. It'd be fun to see them, even the team race, allow to communicate among teammates. That might be an interesting dynamic. And I don't need to talk to them again. I'd have to be right. And I don't want to do that. I can talk to them about, I get a few minutes to talk to them between races, and that's fine. Maybe adding more technology in the racing. So.
All right. So, I mean, obviously you've been sailing for a long time. Do you have a favorite place that you've gotten to sail?
Yeah, that's okay. That's a good question. I've been fortunate. I've gotten to sail a lot of places. The challenge is, I've been coaching in a lot of places more than I've been sailing in other places. I've been fortunate to coach all over. And so some of my favorite places to coach is when I've coached at, I've gone to Kiel in Germany and played at a big event, big international competition called Kiel Week. And that's always fun as a coach. And it's, you're sailing in the way up north, and it's cold and nasty even during the summer. But to smell the vendor food as you're motoring in on your coach boat, and that's pretty nice. The nice German food, and maybe the crepe stand or something. That I always like that. But more, a little more domestically, like in terms of the college venues I like to go to coach at, St. Mary's College in Maryland is a nice place to go. It's one of our closest venues. It's 3.5 hours away. Beautiful venue, and it's nice up on a hill. And so being high when you're coaching up on a hill is gives you a better perspective than right on the water level. And so it's one of the places I like to go to coach from. So St. Mary's, one of my favorite places there. We're spoiled. We've got a great venue here. It's great sailing here usually, and nice access. But there's some pretty cool places. I was coaching down in St. Pete a couple of weeks ago. That was nice to be in Florida. Wind wasn't great, but it was okay. So it's, yeah, I don't know. Some places I don't like to go, but we can't mention those. So.
We'll save that for the next time you come on. All right. You're just talking about food. Food is something that Mike and I love to talk about and to eat. I haven't had dinner yet, and I'm thinking of crepes. I'm not going to eat a crepe tonight, but what's your favorite restaurant in the 757?
Ooh, God, that's a – you know, we live out near Smithfield, and so further out you go, your choices change. But one of the places I always like to go, I love Luna Maya. I've always been a Luna Maya fan for years and years. And so best guacamole, best gold margaritas. I'm a big Luna Maya fan when I get out
the
north.
The spicy salt on top.
Oh, man, I'll take whatever salt they got. So yeah. Yeah. Now I have salt on my face, so it's all I need. Yeah.
It's a great restaurant. Great pick. All right, so we always ask about this question. We ask in other sports, it's a little bit easier. Like, favorite movie based on their sport. Now, there's a lot of boat movies, but I don't know how many are actually based on sailing. Do you have a favorite movie related to your sport? And if you want to, because of how I just framed this, if it's just a movie about being on the water, that's fine too.
No. So there is, there was actually a movie probably the biggest one is, it always comes up, would be Wind. It was an old movie. I don't know who was in it. The woman, the lead actress from Dirty Dancing was in it. And so it came out about a similar time frame, but movie called Wind, and it's about competitive sailing. That was a big one. That's probably I haven't seen it in years, but that was always the one when you're doing Learn to Sail camp or something, and there was no wind or a thunderstorm, you would watch Wind. I think there's another one that had a scene about college sailing in it. I can't remember Zac Efron movie, but I can't remember that one. So yeah, I would say Wind is probably a classic sailing movie. There's one recently out that had some really cool sailing scenes in it. I can't remember what movie it was. I did see it, but it was a very modern movie. I can't remember the name of it, but it had some really cool sailing scenes with like the foiling like America's Cup type boats, and it was neat. So yeah.
All right, so this isn't going to be a racing sailing type of thing, but if, let's just say that you said, hey, we're going to go out in the water and just do kind of, we're going to teach you some basic sailing stuff. It's going to be a relaxing weekend. What's going to be on the music playlist?
Oh, I mean, Buffett. You got to just play Jimmy Buffett. You know, maybe throw in some Bob Marley, Buffett, or you know, some classic Buffett and some Bob Marley. That's probably where I would go. So,
all right. So you mentioned it earlier. You see dolphins, bald eagles. Is there a favorite animal you've encountered on the water?
You know, anytime we see the dolphins, it's hard to keep the team focused for practice. And luckily, they're starting to get used to it. And the Dolphins really will just go right through. But it's the Dolphins are pretty cool. We have a lot of Dolphins. The state of the Elizabeth River and the Lafayette River is thanks to the hard work of the Elizabeth River Project and the community. But the Dolphin population is awesome. It's always fun to see the Osprey. They're always carrying something. When the golf course was active over here, there was an Osprey nest over on one of the channel markers out here that at one point had 5 golf course rakes in it. So the wooden rakes from the golf course. I don't think the golf course knew what was happening to all the rakes, but an Osprey was building its nest out of it. It was hilarious. It was awesome. But the coolest thing to see, because you don't see it as often, is when we see a loggerhead sea turtle out here. That's usually in the fall or during the summer, but that's always cool. You see them right here off of campus. So,
all right. So this is going to be my last question, and it kind of the last one with favorite animals to see leads into something that we've asked some other guests. What do you think? What is the most terrifying animal to you? To be eaten by?
Probably a bear. Actually, I take that back. The bear, I've had a bear come into a camp, and that was pretty frightening. So that I would, but it's not, I'm not going to run into one very often on a daily basis here. But a bear be frightening. A wild hog also. They're mean and big, and so I don't know. I think my everyone's scared of a shark, so we've got it all. So, yeah, maybe bear's my big fear. So,
all right, this is. I guess this will be my. Well, we have 2 more questions, Aaron, because you have the closing one. All right. What is your dream concert, band, and venue?
I've been fortunate to see a lot of really good concerts. Back in the day, before we had kids, my wife worked in radio, and she had a lot of the venues as her clients. And so I was always plus one and got to see some incredible concerts as a plus one. And I just was cleaning out some stuff in my office and found tickets to see Santana. Carlos Santana and Rob Thompson years ago at the amphitheater. I would prefer a smaller venue. But really what I would love to, I don't really care who, I would like to go see someone play at Red Rocks. And I would like to go see and go to Austin City Limits. And I really don't care who, because any of those shows are always good.
Highly suggest you go to Red Rocks. I got to see Green Sky Bluegrass there a couple years ago. Awesome experience. The walk up, you do need to be strategic about where you park.
Yeah.
So you can park at the top and walk down to the venue, but then at the end of the night, you got to walk back up. Or you can park at the bottom, walk up, but then when the show's over, you're walking down. So I think that's the ideal way to do it.
I like that. I like that.
It is a very cool place to see a concert. It just feels like you're somewhere special. And Austin City Limits, that's a goal of mine too. So yeah. I hope you get those done, man. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Stop All coaching right. a little bit. Maybe I have time.
All right. So we want to thank you so much for joining us. We're going to let you close us out with your message for Monarch Nation.
Well, thank you both guys for having me on the Monarchist podcast. It's been a lot of fun, and you really love the support from our Monarch fans. As an alum myself, big believer in the power of the Monarch Nation, and we'd love to have y'all come out and check out some sailing. And guys, when y'all are ready, we're going to take you sailing. All right?
I'm there.
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Thanks again, Coach.
All right, guys. Let's go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.